What you are about to hear constitutes an episode of a documentary produced by myself, André Castro, about people who live and use boats inside London. The interviews and field recordings were collected during the winter and spring of 2007. Thank you to all of those who participated and collaborated in this project. Good listening. In this episode, you hear the interviews with Penny Cuthbert, Bill Blake, and Mickey Gordon.
If you ever feel nervous, get into this position, okay? And you can see the boat's solid. Now, I want you to have a go at wobbling the boat now. See if you can do a circle with your hands and then an other way around circle. That's great. I'll keep going doing that. Don't worry about me. Keep doing that. Face, okay? So bring out the real worry. Like, I am petrified. What is she doing to me? Fantastic.
Is it raining?
Right, now we're going to have a go at using one blade. So put the red blade into your body with a flat spoon. Put the red blade on the water, flat spoon. The green blade, I want you to make that square. And I want you to reach out in front of you, drop it in the water and pull it back towards you. That's it. Take it out and do it again. I'm going to see if you can go around in a circle. That's it. That's very nice. Good. Can we do the red one now? So you're going to put that green one flat on the water and then you've got the red one. You can take it. Try and keep the spoon really square. If it's square, it will go in the water and out the water really easily. Good. Have a go with the green one now.
Okay,
now I want you to turn the other way around. Take your spoon the other way around. Put the handle on the back going, I don't know if I can do this, I feel sick. Cool. Right, stop the boat, place boat on the water. Ah!
I'm Rowing Development Officer for London Youth Rowing, which is a charity set up to get young people into the sport of rowing from not your usual backgrounds, so from multi-ethnic, poor backgrounds. And we have two centres, one here, one over in Newham at the Royal Albert Dock, and this the Lee Rowing Club in Hackney. And during school time, take kids down here on sessions and have a go out on the water, see if they like it, invite them to come back at the weekends when we run a junior session here. I also work with youth clubs, and I use indoor rowing machines in the youth clubs to get them interested, and then again bring them down here in the half-term holidays, Easter holidays, summer holidays. Our biggest time on the water is over the summer, though, because of nice weather. Getting kids involved in something like water sports is much better in the summer when it's warm, not like today, which is freezing. So, we have 4 weeks of summer rowing. Each week, the kids come down on the Monday, and the Tuesday, they start to learn to row. The Wednesday, we usually take them and have a go at another water sport. So from this venue, we take them up the river to the canoe centre and have a go at kayaking, canoeing. We have been known to take them narrowboating. We've taken them sailing, all sorts of things, anything that is just a little bit different to rowing. On the Thursday, we start picking teams and getting them really fine-tune their rowing skills, so that on the Friday, we all go over to the London Regatta Centre and we race as Team Lee, which is from this boathouse. We race against the Docks, which is the one in Newham, and also our other centre, which is down in Barn Elms in Wandsworth. So three groups of kids from all over London meet up on a Friday and race, having never been in a boat on the Monday before. So it's pretty good.
And why do you try to do that, to encourage young people to...
Well, I found rowing only a relatively short time ago. I found rowing about 8 years ago. And I just think it's a great thing for kids to do. It's out of in the outdoors. It doesn't cost an awful lot of money. It's good fun. You can make lots of new friends, be part of a team. And there's all sorts of aspects to it. You can be the top of your sport in it, because it's such a small sport. It's quite easy to achieve quite high levels. But if you didn't want to compete, you're quite welcome to just come and row up and down the river to your own level, you know, and just enjoy it wherever you are. And most rivers these days in England have a rowing club on them. So once you've learnt the skill that's involved, you could take those to any of those rowing clubs in the country and have a go.
How did you get into rowing?
I've got kids, and I wanted them to do something. We sat down here, and there's a lovely cafe next door to the rowing club, and we sat in the sunshine one day and watched this old man putting a couple of kids out in a boat. And I said to my daughter, do you fancy having a go at that? And within 5 minutes, both of us were in a boat, and we were both sold to the idea that this was a good thing to do. And from there on, I went on and did some coaching courses so that I was able to help young people get in the water. And then I ran a couple of summer courses, a couple of initiatives with year six children where they would come down to the river. They'd spend a third of the day rowing, a third of the day on a motor launch. They go up to the Tottenham Lock and see all the nests and stuff. And a third of the day they go for a nature walk around the area. And from all those sort of initiatives that I was running, I discovered that this job was open, the job that I'm in now. And so I moved from being, I actually was a freelance hairdresser, so I moved from being a freelance hairdresser to being a rowing coach, which is completely different. But good fun. It's great. I love this job. I think it's one of the best things I've ever done.
And I think it's important to let the kids discover this part of the city of London, to discover the Leith River. And
oh, gosh, yes. I think it's so important. When you bring kids down here who've never been here before, and adults too, they're just amazed that at the back of Hackney somewhere is this little bit of nature that doesn't feel like you're in central London. It's a bit of greenery, open space, water. I do think that humans and water, we came from the water originally, and so we have an empathy with water. And yes, it's just lovely being down here. There's nothing better. You can't beat it.
And would London evident? Would it be the same city if it didn't have this presence of water? Do you think it would be?
The river? No, the river is the biggest main road that goes through the centre of the city. And if you took away the Thames, London wouldn't survive. You know, it's definitely its main artery is the Thames.
Awesome. The canals, it's also a big contrast to the city that's around them. They are very different. You just go down them and it's a very different city that you have when you go to the canals. It's almost...
Canals to river?
No, canals to the rest of London.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. You can find a bit of nature in a city that is just all concrete. Find yourself on a canal or on the bank of the river, and you can take yourself away from being in the city for while you're there. You can see a bit of nature, and it's just I think that it's quite a relaxing thing to do, watch water and people messing about on water. It's an appealing aspect, definitely.
Yeah, would you like to say something else about what you do, or water and boats?
Okay, well, that's my work life. In my private life, I'm a rower. I actually row down here, and I'm part of a team who train four times a week, twice on the water, twice in the gym. In gym, half my team never turns up. But when it's time to go on the water, everybody's there. Everybody's keen to get in the water. And there's nothing better than keeping fit by just trawling up and down the river. You know, sort of, instead of, if you look in a gym and you see lots of people on these indoor rowing machines sweating away in stale air, in stinky atmosphere, with Muscle Marys parading around all over the place. It's just nothing like being out on the river in the open air, watching the world go by, the scenery pass you by, is beautiful, and I couldn't think of a better way to exercise. On top of that, I belong to a team that have actually been quite successful, so we've won medals and cups, and the buzz that you get from winning something. I never thought I was competitive until I started rowing, and now I'm really seriously competitive, and I really want to win every time I get in a boat. And the joy and thrill that you get from winning medals and cups, you just can't fake it. It's really real, and it makes the whole thing the reason for doing it. So privately, in my own life, doing rowing has really sort of helped me to keep fit, keep focused, and make a lot of friends very quickly. It's been really good.
Bow side rowing on, stretch side backing down, arms over, body leaping, ready, go! Together and touch.
Operate a boatyard not far from here, which is the other side of the riverbank, and it belonged to a client of mine on the old boatyard. To cut a long story short, the boat eventually came up for sale and I was interested in her. She's a 50-foot chalk, a Dutch boat, sailing boat, built in 1916, and she was in Holland until 1932, and then she was brought across to the Hamble on the south coast of England as a yacht, and sailed until sometime in the 60s when she was brought up to London, and she's had several locations in London before finally coming into my ownership.
And you had had like a life related to boats before?
No, I worked in television as a graphic designer. I've always been interested in boats, but in the past, when I took semi-retirement from television, and I opened up a boatyard for something to do, and because of my interest in boats throughout my life, and we had run a boatyard successfully for 15 years until it was redeveloped for housing. And after that period, I came across the river to the other side to my old landlord, and in partnership with them, I run the moorings here at Fresh Wharf.
And what did make you interested on boats?
I've always been interested from a child. My grandfather was a sailor, so perhaps it's in the blood.
Perhaps you could talk a bit more about it.
About the boat?
The interest.
Or my interest? I suppose I've had boats for about 30 years. I had boats on the canals. I started off there. I had an old wooden narrow boat which had belonged to Beecham Lodge in Little Venice in London, and when the charity sold the boat off, I bought her and rebuilt her and turned her back into a carrying vessel. And I had about 10 years on the canals with different types of boats, did a little bit of carrying, had some butty boats, that's the type you pull behind, a couple of motor boats. And my interest, as I say, has always been in boats until, as I say, when I retired, semi-retired, I had nothing to do. And I rekindled and renewed my interest, because I was left with the question, what could I do to pass the time? What better than boats? And when I had the boat yard on the opposite side, we had we did repairs, two boats. It started off as a love for wooden boats, but developed into steel, because the interest and the demand was for repairs to steel boats. So in our heyday, in the short 15 years, we had three dry docks, and we could repair boats up to 150 foot in length, up to about 200 tons in weight. And just you always learn. Every day you learn something new, and that's just how the business carried on. And now I'm really semi-retired. I just look after some moorings with residential boats, and look after the owners and what their needs are. And it's very pleasant, very relaxing, very nice.
And what do you think that brings most people to live on boats?
There are all lots of different reasons, but I think it's a lot quieter and a lot more peaceful than the hustle and bustle of living in a street. Or, I know you still have neighbours here, but everyone who lives in boats are interesting, and they've all got their own reasons for living in boats, so it makes it all the more interesting.
In London, I think it is quite a contrast between the rest of the city when we come to the canals and rivers, and I think it's the presence of water that creates that. It's the presence of water.
Yes, I think so. I mean, it brings out the romantic side of people as well. You know, it's like tales from the riverbank, I suppose, all the adventures people get up to. But no, it's also an affordable way of living, because a lot of people now can't afford to buy property in London. And it gives them a chance to actually buy something, establish themselves. And some boats are extremely luxurious, and they're much more expensive than what flats are now. And people really do care, and in certain parts they do care for the environment and the surroundings, and try and blend in, be suitably sociable.
Have you travelled with this boat?
Not with this boat. As I say, she ended up in my boatyard on the other side of the river. 5 years she sat on top of wooden blocks on the bank. Nobody, the owner very rarely came. He came only two or three times in 5 years. And in the end, the boat was sold, and I managed to buy her. And I am rebuilding her. I've rebuilt most of the insides again, because she was gutted. It's a bit of a strange tale, but when I was first approached about the boat, I was asked to move it from South Dock Marina in Rotherhithe over to my boatyard, and it was on the land there, so I arranged for a crane and for a land transporter to move the boat. She's only 50 foot, but she weighs just under 30 tons, so she's fairly heavy. And the owner then cancelled all the move. 1 year later, he came back to me in a panic. I must have the boat moved. I've been told to move it from where it is, so we started all over again. And it was quite adventurous, really. She was loaded with a crane onto a low loader, a police escort to the Dartford Tunnel. She came through the Dartford Tunnel, because you're not allowed to carry heavy weights over the London bridges. And then she sat for a day in the Essex side of the Dartford Tunnel. And then the following evening, she was brought to Barking and unloaded with another crane. At that time, she still had holes in the plate work of the hull, because she'd been out for 12 years out of the water. And I had a large dry dock at that time, so we pulled the dry dock across the river, lifted her from the low loader into the dry dock. She sat there for a couple of days, and then when I had space in my boatyard, I got another crane in, lifted her out of the dry dock onto the blocks for the then present owner, and she sat there for 5 years, hardly touched, until when my boatyard was closing, we agreed on a sail and I bought her. So one day she'll have a mast back on her. I've got the sails and I hope to take her and sail her and have some fun with her before it's too late.
It's incredible how boats also... Do they have something that people work on and they live on them? It's not like a house, but someone else did it and you live on it. But you...
Yes, you must... You must, when living in a boat, you've really got to try and do one small job a day. No matter how large or no matter how small it is. But just to keep the maintenance, just to keep them clean, keep the dust off the outside, which then causes the paint to rot and whatever. So it's, you know, if you can always do one small job a day, it always helps keep them on the way to hopefully improving.
I don't know, is there something else that you'd like to mention about what you've been talking about or do you think of?
No, not really. No, I think I've said enough.
Thank you very much.
That's all right, it's been a pleasure. And I hope some people listening will perhaps one day try and live in a boat and see how they enjoy it. It's a nice, relaxing way of life. I've got a small office through there, and then there's a shower and a loo, bedroom, you know. So there's enough room for a couple of people comfortably. And there's another cabin in the stern as well. It's full of wood at the moment, and the engine is underneath the cockpit, you know. So it's all right, the dog won't touch you. She's as frightened of you as you might. Yeah. So, I mean, when it's tidy, it's fine, but I'm... In between, I mean, I use this 3 days a week. I live in Gloucestershire, so I go home on a Friday, that's where I'm going now, and I come back on a Monday or a Tuesday morning, you know. 3 days here and off again. So
it's very nice space.
It's okay.
Very beautiful, but...
Yeah, she's nice, but unfortunately, when I was first asked to move her, she was complete. She was all panelled with lovely doors, everything. There was a kitchen, there was a buffet, you know, a display cabinet with all cut glass. And shelves and units. There was a bed sofa sitting there. There's more shelves there. And there was a corner section with seating and a table there. And this guy is crazy. He got somebody to rip all the insides out. He ripped everything out. He didn't touch this. He didn't touch this. But from there down, he emptied the boat completely. Back to the bare metal in this section. And here as well. I've put a bulkhead up. And it's a little office. It's full of stuff at the moment. But he just threw it all away, you know. No, really, he says, oh, I'm going to do it properly. And when I saw her at first, she was built in 1915. She was beautiful, you know. And he had a big hanging lamp and he gave it to me, not this one, another one. And he says, oh, I don't want this. He said, it's rubbish. I'm going to put it in the skip. And I kept it in another boat I had. And then when I finally bought this, you know, I put the lamp back in it, changed it for another one, a Dutch one. But, you know, it's just silly things like that. It's crazy. Crazy.
Because boats, and they are floating pieces of history.
Yeah. Oh, in Holland, I mean, they look after them like they wash and clean them every day. And, you know, they would be ashamed of this if this was in Holland, you know. It's all scruffy and messy inside and the dog. There we go, that's life.
Basically, this is an educational charity. We were set up in 1963 on the site of an old factory. This is an old factory site, chemicals, yeah? Manufacturing chemicals right through the Victorian days. This building here, which is the changing rooms, was the actual warehouse, and that building there was a processing plant. And in the old Victorian times, they used to ship the chemicals by river, all the Victorian days, because they didn't have any roads. But the factory closed in 1963, and in 1963, a very entrepreneurial youth officer in the area asked the factory if he could use the site to store equipment, because it was empty, the site was emptying out at the time, if he could use the site to store some equipment so he could do alternative work with truants, young people who were missing school or offending or in the area. So 2 days a week he used to store equipment to do this. When the factory totally closed down, he then persuaded the old Inner London Education Authority to take over the building and develop it as the first outdoor education centre in London. Okay, primarily doing taking the classroom out of the classroom for young people. Okay, so doing education, but not through the formal means. It was taking using the environment outside as the catalyst for doing learning. Yeah, that was very successful right the way through the 70s and 80s. And in 1990, when the ILEA, the Inner London Education Authority, was abolished, this was handed over to Hackney local authority, but Hackney couldn't afford to run it, so they put a closure order on it. And that's when I stepped in. I've been involved with the place for 40 years. My background is in outdoor education, working with disaffected young people. And I took it over and set it up as a charitable trust. So for the last 15 years, we've operated it as a charitable trust, doing the same work all the way through. So during the weekdays, young people come down here through special projects, through the police projects, through referrals, during Monday to Friday. And in the evenings and weekends, those same young people who you see out here then choose to join as members and come down as a members club, okay? But we've converted the whole site. So this old building here was the old factory, as you can see, but we converted it, and you see the old pictures on it. It's basically an old factory, yeah? A warehouse, empty warehouse, and we converted it into just changing rooms. So the whole building is just changing rooms now. So really, for a tiny little club, we can actually change 80 people at a time. So we've got showers, changing rooms for at least 80 people, yeah, at a time. And this was the first thing we did when we set it up as a charitable trust. I raised all the money to convert this warehouse into changing rooms. And then it took me a further 5 years to convert the main building, which is this building here. It took me 5 years to raise the £1 million that was needed to convert the old factory. Yeah, which we'll have a wander through. Yeah, I'll show you the picture after, but the old factory site was converted and we've developed this building here. It's very functioning, for outdoor education. So the downstairs is a very functioning area. So you've got a reception area, you've got a boathouse, you've got a wet storage area, so young people get changed in the changing rooms and then come and get themselves out, get dressed in appropriate gear if they're doing canoeing. We do mountain biking here. We've got 18 mountain bikes. So we use the environment for doing activities, but the activities are very educationally based. So all the main boats are stored here. But if you come through here, in the main reception area, and this was only completed, this building here was only completed in 2005. You see here, that would have been the old factory, yeah? So that's where we've just been in, the changing rooms, which would have been the old warehouse, and this was the old processing plant, yeah, which was an old factory. But if you have a look now, what we've done is convert the downstairs into a functioning area, but the upstairs is very much a classroom, but not like a classroom that you've ever seen before, okay? Because it's designed to maximise the outside. So young people, when they're doing literacy and numeracy work here, linked with the activities, they don't see it as a formal classroom, yeah? We have got small classrooms here, but you can see the balcony, very much a functioning area. Saturdays and the weekends, it's very much a club, so the activities for club people. But it was even designed, so you'll see it, all your doors and the balcony open flat. So if we're doing formal education work, we can bring tables out here, but young people don't think they're in a classroom environment. Yeah, so it's really about taking the classroom out of the formal classroom setting. Yeah, so really nice setting considering we're in Hackney. It's absolutely beautiful. We've got a canteen, offices. You say the access right way through the building. You can see the building photographs over the last few years. And if you look at that building, that picture there, that's a copy of the black and white picture downstairs in the reception, which was the old factory site. You can see the sort of before and after, yeah, shots. But we've got a purpose-built classroom area, general purpose area, multifunctioning hall, and we've also got a superb gym. Okay, with fitness equipment, which again separately funded. This came from a separate fund through Sport England. This would be a good enough gym in any kind of leisure centre or a fee-paying centre. But again, this is part of our own programme for our members and user groups who come in, so they don't see it necessarily as formal education, but it's linked in with what we do. Yeah.
Actually, maybe you want to sit outside and just have a bit of.
Ask me some questions. That's probably easier for me to.
Perhaps you can grab a pair of chairs and just sit up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so Miki, maybe you could go back a bit to what we were saying about the programs that you do with young people. And you try to bring them here and try to get them in the classroom without them thinking.
Yeah. Well, Leaside, as I said, Leaside was set up as the first outdoor education centre in London back in the 60s and 70s. And it is quite unique because outdoor education, people think of outdoor education as outdoor pursuits. And it's not. It's simply using the outdoors as the educational tool. Yeah, using the environment. And if we're located on the river, how best to use the river as a learning opportunity. Yeah. So although we do kayaking at a very high level, it's really meant to give people the opportunity of achieving something at a very, very small rate and a small pace that they can enjoy doing. So they don't see it as learning. Okay, and secondly, the learning which we need to do for on a formal side, like on the literacy, numeracy and things like that, most of the young people will get here. The problems aren't the learning difficulties, in other words, the speech difficulties or literacy difficulties or numeracy difficulties. Most of their thing is motivation, yeah? And if they're not motivated to do any learning, they're not going to learn it. And what we do here is motivate them in a totally, totally unique way by using the outdoors in a fun way where they can actually see the learning, but it's hidden within what they're doing. Yeah, so it's not clear, it's very overt. It's very covert, should I say, it's very hidden. So it's within whatever we're doing. So they gain massively. It doesn't take a brain to work out that if you can get in, you've never paddled a canoe before, and you get in a kayak and paddle this way across the river, 20 metres, you don't need a gold star or somebody to tell you well done or a 10 out of 10. if they've done it, they know they've done it, and they get that feeling of self-satisfaction immediately if the sensation is there. So they can grow on that sensation that they can achieve something at a very small rate through their own endeavour. Yeah? Then you give them more and more of a difficult task all the time, that fun's built into it. Even like the biking. So the Riverway is ideal for doing that here because it means they don't have to compete with someone else. If you put somebody in a kayak, you're not racing with a kayak. They're only competing against their own fears, perhaps, yeah? Their own inhibitions, yeah? So they can achieve something very simply. They don't necessarily have to race or compete, yeah? Although we have competition built into it as part of the progression of where they do. I mean, we're unique in an establishment, particularly in Hackney, is where we're located, is we've got a very enviable record in the sport of canoeing because we've never had a year since 1969 we haven't had somebody in the British team. Okay, for a tiny little club, that's quite unique. It is a minority sport, but it is very, very unique for having something like that every year. That's six Olympics, yeah? That's including 2012. We've got three boys who are here today who are training and who've been part of the selected for the 2012 British team for the Olympics, which, you know, which is a great privilege for us, particularly if it's going to be held in London. But primarily, the root work is working with disaffection and young people who are having problems in school. Yeah, so it's not problem kids, it's kids with problems, yeah, particularly in the educational framework. So a lot of our young people have come because they've been excluded from school, or they're not attending because of truanting, or they're school phobic, they've got problems with the school, and that causes its own behavioural problems. Yeah, by bringing them down here to do a short courses to introduce them to the outdoors as the education, yeah, as the learning opportunity, we hopefully can bridge that gap between the problems that they're having in a school and their own personal problems.
And what's their reaction when they first arrive to here?
They first arrive here, it's spelt out to them that they have a good time, okay? But because they don't see it as a formal educational establishment, there is a different approach on how we can work with them, okay? So, for instance, they're coming here, they get very excited because they're going to do something that they've never done before, kayaking, particularly from kids in Hackney. It's something exciting, so that the fear's already gone from it, the excitement has taken that place over, yeah? It's very structured, so perhaps for these young people, it's the first time ever they've had rules placed on them. But the rules, they see it very, very simply, because they need to wear appropriate clothing. And it's explained to them, why do you need to wear safety clothing when you're kayaking? It's simply because the worst thing can happen to you, if you fall over, you could drown. Yeah, it doesn't take a brain to work out for these young people, right, in that case, I'll make sure. So the rules, if you like, even for the sport itself, are built in to the education opportunity for them. So they almost rule set for themselves, saying, right, we're going off here and doing this. What do you think we should be aware of? What do you think that we need to be take care of for yourself to make sure you're safe? They can set the rules quite easily. It fits in with our own learning, but they can see the value of those rules. Not necessarily rules which are thrust on them, that often establishments do, which they can't have any kind of relationship with, no bearing, you know, no understanding of the rules, you can't do this because they don't have a feeling for it, whereas here they can actually see it straight away. Yeah. Kayaking from here in a potentially hazardous boat, it could capsize or they could hit a craft, they're wearing the appropriate clothing, but they don't feel it as if it's any different, because everyone wears it, yeah, because of safety. Yeah.
And you think that in general, these young people, would perhaps they be more motivated if, without coming here, if they had from very young age this experience with nature and water and sport?
I think for lots of them, they don't. I mean, particularly in Hackney, they don't even realise the river exists. There's rivers and canals running through Hackney that they don't even see. They, you know, to be fair, some of the rivers aren't in the best of states in the conditions where they sort of are appealing, but they don't necessarily see. Particularly in these things, they don't see the dirty in the river, okay, because they're in a kayak. You know, it's sort of blinded to them because they're actually in a kayak and they somehow, they think they're removed from the water. They're actually placed on the water, they're paddling, but they're not necessarily seeing the dirt or the possible hygiene in terms of the condition of the water ways. So, yeah, I think it's sometimes introducing them to things that are totally alien to them, although they're living in the area. You know, you come down to Hackney and we're sitting here overlooking the marshes here, but I bring people from senior officials from Hackney's authorities who don't realise this is part of Hackney. You know, it is a hidden area, and you've got parks and the green spaces that are there, but often they're not used as people think of them as recreational areas, but they're also educational areas. They can be used, you know, very, you know, with a bit of constructive thinking, they can be used educationally as well.
Yeah. And once they go away from here, do they tend to return?
It's an interesting one because we have, for instance, I'll give you an example. Like we have an on-track course. We called it an on-track course. It's for those 15-year-olds who have been poorly motivated at school and who are likely to fail in the school system, the SATs, the Standard Assessment Test, when they're 14, 15. Okay? We bring them down here for a 6-week, 10-week course called On Track. Now, the approach we make is saying 4 days during the summer term, these are the ones who are likely to fail their SATs, who are then likely to go on the slippery slope in educational terms, or truant, and not attend school. And we make agreement with them saying, if you attend school for 4 days a week, on Fridays throughout the summer term, you can come down here and you'll do mountain biking, you'll do canoeing, you'll do an arts project, you'll be doing video making, you'll be doing a whole range of things, but outside of the classroom, okay, using the outdoors as the other one. Now, for filmmaking, as you'll see, as a sound call, you're filmmaking here, if you're actually doing the filmmaking, the hidden educational aims within that are the young people have to design their own film, they actually have to do the filming, they have to do the scripting, they have the editorials, they have to do the music, so all the learning can be done in a very small project, happen to be filming outside. So they take ownership of their project, but all the learning is hidden within the activities they're doing, but they enjoy doing what they're doing, so it doesn't become difficult seeing the learning. Yeah. Now, on those ones, we know the statistic returns are phenomenal because it's called an on-track to put them back on track in education. Yeah, this particular project we do. And the schools have got a fantastic record of 90%, 95% attendance record for these young people who are the likely truants. So 95% attendance record is one way of measuring it. So they're attending school, okay? The other one is these young people who attend here, the schools monitor them through their year 10, know that they're already attending schools, they've been put back on track so they can start doing their exams, and we do a mentoring scheme for 3 months to support them to when they start their year 10 to ensure that they're able. But those are fine, they're the sort of tick boxes for educational terms. I can measure it very simply because it's a club as well, as I think half of those young people then choose to join Leaside as individual members of their own choice. They're not part of the course. The course is now finished. They then return as members, as many people as you see down here, who were introduced through various means, through the pupil referral units, through the Metropolitan Police Safer Schools Initiative, on the Social Services at Risk Register, through the schools, On Track Project, something like that. But half of those young people who take part in those courses then join Leaside as a member, yeah, of their own choice. And that's where I know we've made it, because they're doing it of their own free will then. Yeah? An easy measurement.
And this would be great.
Yeah,
I think, don't know if you'd like to mention something else, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Is it open to the general
public? Well, the Leaside Trust is a charitable trust. It is open to the public, yeah, and we encourage particularly family users, but it's open to the public. When people come down here, what we say is, come down here for young people, anything above 10 years of age, they can come down here, have an introduction for £2. It will cost them £2 to have an introduction to see if they like what they're doing. If they like what they're doing, they can pay an extra £10 for the joint membership for the whole term.
What are you doing?
I'm making a sound recording.
For what?
I'm making a radio documentary about people using boats in London.
Oh.
I was interviewing Nikki just a minute ago.
Oh, okay. I was just curious.
That's all right.
You're nosy.
That's fine.
Especially you, yeah.
That can't get up.
Are you going to go up the river?
Not. We've already gone down, so we're just going outside here.
Hi. Yeah, I know, you can't pull up to bank and then can't do that, you're snapping. Put it back in the water.